This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is BFM 89.9 and this is Enterprise Biz Bites. It is a very rainy and gloomy Friday, the 7th of October 2022, and it is just past 12:05 p.m. I'm Christine Wong and I'm joined in the studio by
Lily Chai.
And today we're talking about Budget 2023. Of course we are, because it is set to be tabled today. And so along this vein, we've decided to take a hard look at Malaysia's current employability rate and job market with a check-in on what our startup want from Budget 2023. We'll be hearing later from Derek Toh, founder and CEO of Hiredly, and this show is brought to you by Masing, Reinvent Spaces, Enhance Life. If you would like to get in touch with us and talk to us about this topic and about Budget 2023, of course we are on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We are also on Twitter at BFM Radio. Now, as we transition into the endemic phase, the reopening of many economic sectors and international borders would signal continued economic growth for Malaysia right into 2023. However, there are pressing issues that still need to be addressed by the government, especially in areas like employability. So with the upcoming budget being tabled today, as I mentioned earlier, Derek Toh, CEO of Hiredly, mentioned that one of the ways the government could get a handle on this issue is via grants and soft skills training, which should help graduate employability. Graduate employment has been fairly sluggish since the pandemic started back in 2020. And in fact, the unemployment rate has dropped to roughly 4.1% in 2021 from 4.4% in 2020. But before the pandemic, Malaysia's unemployment rate stood at only 3.9%.
So many Malaysians have lost their job due to the pandemic. But as we transition into endemicity, the employability rate has also started to grow quite slowly. But many people are still reeling from the effects of the pandemic, of course, and struggling to make ends meet due to the current economic climate. Now, Malaysia has received around 1 to 3 billion ringgit in approved investments, which covers sectors in manufacturing, services, and primary sectors for the first half of 2022, which spans around 1,700 projects. And foreign direct investments, FDIs, they contributed for roughly 71% of the numbers, amounting to around 87 billion ringgit. And the government should continue to encourage the FDI's momentum, which can in turn create more quality jobs to elevate those in the B40 category into M40. And the core objective should be on creating quality jobs for the rakyat to help enrich and improve the livelihood of the rakyat.
Yes, and the startup ecosystem has been seeing some major growth in the Southeast Asian region. According to Malaysia's Digital Economy Blueprint, we're aiming to attract 5 Malaysian-based unicorns by 2030. Hence, there is a need for the upcoming budget to incentivize driving forward more startup investments, which would hopefully lead to more unicorns being created, which will in turn be a catalyst for creating much-needed high-skilled jobs and digital jobs as well. And with more people participating within the labour market, this should also help elevate Malaysia's economy.
To give a little bit of background on the Malaysia startup ecosystem, according to a survey done by Genome's Global Startup Ecosystem Report 2021, KL, Kuala Lumpur, is recognized as amongst the ranking of 20 to 30 within the top 100 emerging ecosystems list, with a valuation of roughly $16 billion. So Malaysia is known as one of the pioneers in the Southeast Asia's digital economy, and it's one of the first few countries within the region to establish a special economic zone for high-tech businesses, developing one in Central South Selangor way back in 1997. So the Malaysia Economy Digital Economy Corporation, MDEC, they recently launched several initiatives with the aim of bringing local tech companies into the global arena. So other government initiatives such as the Cradle Investment Program also support Malaysian startups financially in a bid to help develop the local startups ecosystem. system.
Yeah. So let's take a look at some highlights from last year's budget that specifically targets Malaysian entrepreneurs and SMEs as well. So first, of course, there was a lot of funding and relief for SMEs. There was a 1.2 billion ringgit allocation to help companies with gearing or leverage issues under equity investment and quasi-equities. There was 14.2 billion ringgit given to Bank Negara Malaysia's SME special funds. There was a targeted relief and recovery facility that received an additional 2 billion ringgit as well. Then for an additional funding for affected companies, there was an injection of 3 billion ringgit with another 2 billion ringgit given to special strategic investment funds to attract foreign multinational investments as well. 25 million ringgit went towards the mission of increasing trade and investments, which explored high impact investments and new export markets. Of course, there was also that special tax exemption for MSMEs that lasted until June 2022. And then there was also a targeted wage subsidy program where 600 million ringgit was used to benefit over 26,000 employers and 330,000 employees.
So there was also SME support as well. So Innovation Hub, being the catalyst for IR 4.0, received 30 million ringgit, and this is expected to benefit 10,000 entrepreneurs. And Cradle was allocated 20 million ringgit to develop the My Startup strategy with the aim of creating 5,000 job opportunities spanning 2,500 companies. For clarity, My Startup is Malaysia's official startup ecosystem platform under MOSTI that provides an environment for the startup ecosystem partners to share information, procure services, and create partnerships. And besides that, 45 million ringgit was this year disbursed under the Industry Forward Initiative, which will go to SMEs and companies in the manufacturing and servicing sector. For context, Industry Forward Readiness Assessment is a comprehensive program under MITI to help firms assess their capabilities and readiness to adopt Industry 4.0 technologies and processes into their companies.
So there was a lot of focus essentially with this year's budget 2022, a lot of focus on business recovery, a lot of exemptions and relief for SMEs as well. But now, of course, we're delving a little bit more into the endemic approach, you know, and I think we're all curious to know what Budget 2023 will have in store for SMEs to work with as we continue to open up. So if you are a business owner or entrepreneur, like, send us your hopes, your wish list for Budget 2023 as well. And it also, you know, if you used any of these resources that we mentioned from Budget 2022, how it's maybe benefited you, maybe how you use any wage subsidies, any funds or grants, you know, let us know, share with us. Again, we are on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and on Twitter at BFM Radio. Now, of course, after the break, we will be joined by Derek Toh, founder and CEO of Hartley, to talk a little bit about the state of our job market, to talk about local employability, and to look at the startup ecosystem and his wish list for Budget 2023. And this is Enterprise Biz Bytes, and coming up is Working for a Living by Huey Lewis and the News. The show is brought to you by Masing, Reinvent Spaces, Enhance Life.
Bloggers for Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
You're tuned in to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Christine Wong and I'm joined by
Lily Chai.
And today we are talking about the startups wish list for Budget 2023, of course, because it will be tabled later today. And if you want to get in touch with us about this topic, you can reach us on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and Twitter at BFM Radio. And this show was brought to you by Masing, Reinvent Spaces, Enhance Life. Now on the line with us to talk about his wish list for Budget 2023 is Derek Toh, CEO and founder of Hiredly. So thanks, Derek, for joining us today. Now, to start us off, the upcoming Budget 2023 is, of course, under very close scrutiny, as many will be looking into how it will aid in Malaysia's recovery trajectory. As an entrepreneur yourself, what are you looking for in this year's budget?
Yes. So the way I look at it right now is short-term and long-term, right? Or short-term to sort of medium-term. So in the short-term, I know that the government has done a lot of hiring grants in the past. And also there's been a lot of trading in terms of soft skills. I mean, recently it does sound like they are sort of group these two things together, where they are actually placing out a lot of, I believe, university graduates. They're putting them through training and then they're actually placing them into companies. So I understand, I suppose, the need to want to do that because obviously when you're spending money on training, you want to tie it to an outcome, which is an actual job. So we can see it making an impact, right? I'm looking at like different agencies sort of have their different programs. Again, just as an observer, it looks like, you know, we've hired, maybe helped like thousands of people get jobs through this method. In the thousands, I'm not sure if it's crossed like 10,000 or not, but that those kind of numbers. And from a standpoint of over 200,000 graduates every year, it's making some impact, but we can do more there. So I would hope that the government will continue these kind of initiatives, whether, if anything, perhaps they want to try to consider splitting the two, right? Like splitting the hiring grant from the training, from their training budget, because there will be many employers out there who perhaps they don't value that third-party training as much, right? So they value third-party training as much. And they know that hiring a fresh graduate with very little experience is a risk for them. So the government can help kind of reduce that risk by subsidizing their salary, right? And I think that budget could go a lot further if they don't force every graduate to go through training. So something to kind of reconsider.
Right. Speaking of improving graduate employability through grants and, you know, training, right? Could you help us understand a little bit better as to how they can help with graduate employability in today's job market?
It's been quite well known that one of the challenges law graduates face is their communication skills. Even just how they interview and get a job, etc. Those things are a bit lacking. And it's no big mystery. We've talked about this for, at least 10 years or so. So, of course, we can, the bigger thing to tackle is education, right? Like, that's the bigger, if we can sort of like look at education at that level. But of course, this is a really, really gigantic thing to try to tackle now. And therefore, what the government is doing as some kind of like stopgap measure, if you like, is to train the graduate as soon as they're coming out of university, sort of like supplement their education at university level, like add on another layer like that, to bridge the graduate from university into the working life. But it seems like there's a specific focus on soft skills, which I think is good, because if you're training on hard skills, the thing is, or hard skill technical skills, this might be different for different kind of jobs, right? But soft skills applies to almost any job. So if you have great soft skills, there's an advantage. And I think it's right to focus on soft skills, right? And that's what the government is doing now. Like I mentioned, I think the one thing is to kind of assess how effective it is, so far. Like per dollar spent, how many graduates are put into jobs? I don't have access to that kind of information. But from a theoretical or philosophical standpoint, when I understand how the programs are working, I can see that it's basically doing that, bridging the graduate outside of the university into the job.
Now, let's move a little bit into your wheelhouse, Derek. Talk to us about the current job market environment and the unemployment rate in Malaysia. Does it correlate with what our regional peers are experiencing?
Yeah, I understand that the data shows that the unemployment rate is actually improving, as in it's going down, which is a good sign. On the ground here, this is also our experience. So we are a recruitment company, and I have to say recruitment activities on the platform are doubling, right? So every year since COVID started, it's actually been doubling. And from my own network of people in the recruitment industry, it does look like many recruitment businesses are doing well. So I believe this is representative of the market recovering, right? If you want to sort of compare to our regional peers, I don't have a side-by-side comparison, but in any case, it does look like ours is going on a positive, it is on a positive trend right now.
Right. So can you share with us what are some of the catalysts for the job market growth currently?
Yes, I think in 2020, obviously, with all the unpredictability of the lockdowns and COVID and all that, you know, many businesses were struggling. There's some that were generally struggling. Like if you were in travel and hospitality, you were directly impacted, for example. But most other businesses were more cautious than not. So it wasn't that their businesses were badly impacted. They're probably doing okay, maybe a little bit, maybe slightly impacted. But they were cautious. And I think when 2021 came about and people saw signs of recovery, some businesses started seeing an opportunity to grow, right? So while others were still being somewhat fearful and cautious, some businesses said that, no, let's start hiring now. And we could gain a sort of like a advantage, right? And we need to recover from lost time in 2020. So you fast forward to 2022, I believe this is still the case. So you have the next batch of businesses who are looking at this and saying, I guess the pandemic is, I wouldn't say it's over, but you know, more or less people are trying to live normal lives already. So they are ramping up a lot of their recruitment and business operations again to make, you know, to sort of make up for lost time a bit. So a lot of it is being driven by, you know, this kind of mindset right now.
Now, Derek, it's been pointed out that foreign direct investment into Malaysia has been seen as a driver towards economic recovery due to its impact on job creation and financial inflows. At present, what can you tell us about Malaysia's attractiveness as an investment destination? What are our draw factors?
When any company is considering which country to set up operations, one of the most important questions they ask, I mean, besides things like infrastructure and all that, right, is actually talent. So when you're setting up these operations, the most important thing, you are basically setting up to hire people. Basically, that's what you're there to do. So talent is the biggest factor. And right now, I would say that, you know, Malaysia as a country, you can see this as a strength, or I mostly see it as a strength, is that we speak many different languages, right? So obviously, you know, Bahasa Malaysia is our national language. And, you know, by speaking Bahasa Malaysia as a national language, it also means that we can communicate with our Indonesian counterparts, you know, somewhat. And English is also strong, which is an international language. And there are those that also speak, you know, Chinese, and that can also help us communicate with, you know, like Chinese businesses, which is obviously booming, right? The Chinese economy and all that. So with us being very multilingual, I actually believe it makes us a great place to set up like international hubs. You know, so and I think that is a great way to attract like foreign direct investment. I mean, not to mention the fact that overall, you know, we have high levels of high proportion of our people with degrees, for example. So it's considered fairly high skill in the region. Most of the time when companies come and set up in any country, they will ask about talent. And I might get involved in those conversations sometimes. So I believe this is our advantage.
All right. Well, we do have to take a short break for some messages, but we'll continue our conversation with Derek Toh, founder and CEO of Hiredly, shortly. Of course, if you want to get in touch with us as well, WhatsApp is 018-789-8899 and Twitter is @BFMRadio. This show is brought to you by Masing, Reinvent Spaces, Enhance Life. And coming up is Just Can't Get Enough by Depeche Mode here on BFM 89.9.
Birkins for Mama. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Woo, this is Enterprise Biz Bites. I'm Christine Wong and I apologize for cutting off the sweeper. I'm joined in the studio by
Lily Chai.
And today we're talking about Budget 2023. And we're talking specifically about what startups want from it, as it will be tabled later today. If you want to get in touch with us, we are on WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and Twitter @BFMRadio. On the line with us is, of course, Derek Toh, founder and CEO of Hiredly, to share his thoughts. And the show is, of course, brought to you by Masing, Reinvent Spaces, Enhance Life.
So, Derek, continuing our conversation, right? So there is always this conversation about encouraging Malaysia's startup ecosystem to encourage entrepreneurship. So at the moment, what can you tell us about the whole startup scene? And are we creating enough of a conducive environment for startups to grow?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, as a startup founder myself, I would say one of the main challenges of, I suppose, the growth of the ecosystem is that Malaysia as a market, it's not big, right? So when you're talking about foreign investors or foreign or international VCs, they tend to look at Southeast Asia as one market, even though it's not actually one market. Southeast Asia is big as one market, but Malaysia as one country within this market is not big. So for most startups growing, and obviously in the beginning, it would just be in Malaysia, the market size sometimes is not attractive to an international VC. So what happens is many startups end up trying to grow regionally to try to, you know, cater or try to target a larger sort of target market size and therefore attract the attention of funding, right? But of course, once you grow past your local market, right, your risk profile changes as a startup, right? Not only is it difficult to manage a company in two countries, you know, when you're still, your product is probably still evolving. At the same time, you're going to enter another country where there's a local player and it's much easier for them to defend and grow in their space because they're familiar. So I think because of this, it's not easy to overcome, that there will be some kind of funding gap if you're just relying on international VC. So I believe the startup ecosystem will benefit a lot from, you know, trying to encourage more local investment. So Malaysian investors or Malaysian VCs who can appreciate perhaps a bit of a longer term strategy to being in Malaysia first for a bit longer time before going regional, right? So we have a lot of early stage pre-seed or seed investment right now. But once it goes to the growth stage, there is a very clear gap in funding. So it's because when it goes to growth stage, if you talk to international VC, the next thing they'll say is, oh, Malaysia has a market and it's not very big. You know, where else are you? So we can help bridge that gap by, you know, continue to grow this ecosystem through encouraging more funding to come into Malaysia. But to do that, it's a much more complex question. I think, for example, the talent has to be there. You know, either our education needs to, you know, improve to create the talent, or we really allow, we need to look at our immigration policies, if you like, right, for hiring foreign talent. We look at it a little bit. And that should help the ecosystem improve.
Now, beyond just creating a conducive environment for our startups, there needs to be a discussion about keeping them here in Malaysia to generate investments and create jobs. Companies like Grab moving abroad have raised many questions about our ability to do so. So, Derek, are we doing enough to keep successful startups here in Malaysia and to help them grow further as well?
Are we doing enough? We can always do more. I believe Tasim is the first unicorn we've had, if I'm not mistaken. But even then, I believe most of their operations is actually outside of Malaysia. Again, I don't know them in detail. I just as an observer. And as they grow, you know, like who knows, you know, what you know, where it will take them. So it is a challenge. I think there's a lot of funding opportunity at regional level. And it is very tempting to move to a market like Singapore. Because once you move to a market like Singapore, you are automatically seen as like maybe like a regional startup. There are some VC funds that prefer, maybe their mandate requires them, you know, to have the startup based in Singapore because of the access to funding. And there might be a lot of conditions to this. So we can definitely do more. I think we can definitely do more. And I think if we want to be more competitive, we should, I mean, not just about funding, you know, we should look at our policies on talent, you know, which includes education and immigration. Those things have to be, you know, have to be looked at. I think from the government standpoint, a lot more input from working directly with the ecosystem is quite important because the government can only do so much. I think they need to sort of empower the big ecosystem players to build this, you know, in Malaysia. Because if you look at, say, I mean, everyone's looking at Silicon Valley, right? The main reason why there's a big boom there is because there were so many successful startups that became giants. And that's, those successful startups encouraged more investment to come in, created the talent to sort of build the next generation of startups. So it's actually driven by the successful startup. So I think government should just be focusing on trying to build as many of these successful startups as possible, and they will build the ecosystem.
Mm. Right, let's talk about numbers, right? Could you give us an idea of how much the startup market generates for the Malaysian economy?
I can guess right now that it's tiny. I can guess right now that it's very tiny, which is why I believe this is a medium to long-term thing. So yeah, if you look at it as a percentage of GDP, it's, yeah, like I said, probably tiny. There are lots of other industries, like just manufacturing, for example, could be really big, you know, and then our government might look at it and say, look, startups are cool, they're attractive or sexy, but of course, there are these kind of like bread and butter industries that we shouldn't ignore, which I think is very valid. But if you are going to take a bet on Malaysia's future, I would still say every dollar invested in trying to build a startup ecosystem could come back many times once we create more unicorns and we can see examples of it everywhere around the world.
Mm-hmm. And with all these surrounding quality job creation, a valid question to ask you, is the Malaysian talent pool equipped and ready to take on these jobs?
It's a tough one, I have to say. I guess it depends on what the company is looking to hire. Let's say you're saying that if companies are coming here to try to hire software developers or tech talent, there is definitely a talent pool here. But in every market, everywhere around the world, tech talent is in short supply, right? This is not unique to Malaysia. And it's because the tech industry is booming a lot faster than, you know, we are outputting or creating talent like this. So I would say that, yeah, is the talent ready? Well, not quite. But if the companies come and they start hiring, we will create more talent. It's a market, right? Like supply and demand. When there are more jobs like this in the market, naturally more and more people will choose to become software developers because that's where the jobs are. And then the talent will come. And I believe if the government continues to support this, to actively support these two programs to help teach people coding and all that, this is very important. I'm generally an advocate of everyone learning how to do software, like coding, programming, even though they don't intend to go into tech, right? I believe it's like a programming language is like knowing how to speak English or BM. It's just the language to speak to the computer. You may not do it as a job, but understanding how to speak to the computer should be just like speaking English or BM. It should be the same. Yeah. So everyone should learn it.
So Derek, to get your thoughts on the budget that is tabling later today, do you foresee this year's budget to be one that will surprise you?
Well, obviously everyone's anticipating the general election coming soon. So, and generally, my understanding is before every general election, the budget tends to be a bit more generous, you know, or exciting. I'm not sure what the right word is, a bit more exciting and all that. So I'm hopeful, actually. I mean, as a rakyat, I do want to see things that will benefit everyone, all Malaysians. I'd be very curious to see if anything unique comes out of the budget. I mean, we do know what the government has been doing the past few years to try to help the economy recover. So is it just going to be more of the same? Maybe they just allocate more money? That'd be interesting to see. Or they come up with something really unique and creative. And, you know, I'm excited. So I believe most of Malaysians will also be very interested to find out what's in this year's budget.
Yeah, absolutely. We're all also chomping at the bit to know the results, the findings of Budget 2023 as well. But thank you very much to Derek for sharing your thoughts on your wish list for Budget 2023. That actually brings us to the end of today's show. Of course, today we were talking about the startup wish list for Budget 2023, and this show was brought to you by Masing, Reinvent Spaces, and Hans Live. We were speaking to Derek Toh, founder and CEO of Hiredly. But do not go anywhere, of course. After the Breakfast Grill, after the 1 p.m. news bulletin is the Breakfast Grill replay. So we'll be hearing from Sean Kidney, the CEO of Climate Bonds Initiative, which is an international nonprofit organization working to mobilize global capital for climate action. That's all coming up shortly. On behalf of myself and Lily Chai, have a lovely long weekend. And of course, do stay tuned to look for the Budget 2023 coverage later on today. I leave you now with Dreams by the Cranberries here on BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.